Welcome to God and Country Radio. Weekend program discusses current social, political, economic, and prophetic events in the light of biblical theology. I'm your host, Pastor Brad Winship, pastor of Harbor Bible Church in Central New Jersey. This week, it's back to talking about President Donald J. Trump and TDS, Trump Derangement Syndrome. For the last two programs, I've been discussing the anti-Israeli protests on college campuses and protests in general. But here's an article. Polls find most Americans are worried about violence after the 2024 election. In the latest Battleground Civility poll conducted by the Terrence Group, Research Lake Partners, and Georgetown University, 78% say they're worried that the 2024 election will result in violent activity. Participants were also asked the following, thinking about the issue of political division as a whole, on a scale of 0 to 100, where 0 is there is no political division in the country, and where 100% is political division on the edge of civil war, where would you rank the level of political division in the country? And they put it at 78%. Well, always be suspicious of polls. But in general, that poll tells us what we already know. There is an ideological division in America. America has become two Americas, pagan America and Christian America. Back in the 1960s, the division between the Democrats and the Republicans was mostly over the degree to which the government needs to help people. How much government needs to redistribute wealth for the sake of charity? Should there be big government or individual responsibility? Both the Republicans and the Democrats agreed that abortion was evil, that marriage was one man, one woman, that immigration needs to be regulated and limited, and that government deficit spending is wrong, and that men should not claim to be women and play in women's sports. But now each party has a completely different moral worldview. The Democrats believe that morals are a function of human desire, while the Republicans, for a little while longer, are still holding on to morals being based on the higher law of nature and nature's God. Oh, by the way, the Biden administration has just changed Title IX in the 1972 Civil Rights Education Amendment to now include sexual orientation, so that schools will be required to allow transgender boys to play in girls' sports. 20 conservative states are now suing the Biden administration over this, because Title IX was a bill passed by Congress, and the president does not have the authority to sign an executive order to change Title IX. But the Democrats don't care. They believe in practicing civil disobedience when it comes to laws they don't like. By this, they gain favor with their supporters and put the time and expense of suing on the conservatives. Well, my point is this. Changing Title IX shows us just how invested the left is in erasing gender distinctions. And there are plenty of other examples of social leaders, legislators, college professors, public school principals who believe a virtuous world would be a gender as a choice, unisex world. But a nation cannot continue if half the people believe in erasing gender, open borders, printing money, killing babies in the womb, and the other half doesn't. Now, someone might say, why can't we all just get along? You do your thing, I'll do my thing. But when it comes to these moral issues, your thing will infringe on my thing. We don't want our children taught your paganism, and your paganism is going to bankrupt our government. Plus, there's a God in heaven that expects the righteous, if they're to be righteous, to enforce God's basic moral laws on the whole nation. As is often said, the sin of Sodom wasn't that everyone was a sodomite, but that the general public accepted and celebrated the sodomy. So there's a culture war going on in our country. The moral battle of the age is coming to a head, and that's why there's so much political division and polarization in our country. The Bible tells us, how can two walk together unless they be agreed? The prophet Amos, chapter 3, verse 3. That verse is often quoted, but here's the context and what it's really referring to. Amos begins by stating, hear the word which the Lord has spoken against you. I will punish you for all of your iniquities. Then Amos says, two cannot walk together unless they're agreed. In other words, men cannot walk with God unless men agree with God. As it was, the nation was not walking with God. They were acting as God's adversaries. In the same way, evil will not walk with God's people, and God's people cannot walk together with evil. In the New Testament, 2 Corinthians chapter 6, for what partnership has righteousness with lawlessness? Or what fellowship has light with darkness? Or what harmony has Christ with Satan? So because of this, you can take it to the bank that our nation will soon come apart. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 12, verse 25, any nation divided against itself is laid waste. And trust me, what Jesus says comes to pass. Abraham Lincoln quoted that scripture before the Civil War at the Republican Convention of 1858. Quote from Lincoln, a house divided against itself cannot stand. That's Matthew 12, 25. Lincoln continued, I believe this government cannot endure permanently half slave and half free. I do not expect the Union to be dissolved. I do not expect the house to fall, but I do expect it will cease to be divided. It will become all one thing or all the other. In other words, Lincoln was saying that the nation will become either all slave or all free. So Lincoln went on to explain, either the opponents of slavery will arrest the further spread of it and place it where the public mind shall rest in the belief that it is in the course of ultimate extinction. Or its advocates, the advocates of slavery, will push it forward till it shall become alike lawful in all of the states, old as well as new north as well as south. Unquote. And what Lincoln said about slavery also applies to the moral battles America is facing today. Either America will become Sodom and Gomorrah, or America will return to being a Christian nation. It will become all one thing or all the other. The current division cannot continue for very long. That's the point. Now, most people imagine America can continue as some sort of moral melting pot indefinitely, where everyone can do their own thing as long as they don't hurt anyone else. But I hope you understand that's a fantasy. That's not the way the world works. People become militant and evangelistic in their ideology, and no man is an island. We all affect each other. You can't have Baal worship coexisting with Jehovah worship. You can't have communism coexisting with economic liberty. You can't have transgenderism and LGBTQ coexisting with God's moral laws given in Genesis. You know, we've all seen those bumper stickers coexist with symbols of various religions and ideologies. Anyone with a lick of common moral sense understands that's impossible. Religious and ideological freedom can only be tolerated to a certain point. Right now, we are in a temporary transitional time as sides are being drawn. And for now, people imagine opposing ideologies can coexist. But soon, once evil is empowered, the public's going to realize coexisting is impossible. You know, we see this when Islam gets a foothold. People in the West, in their naivety, often think, why can't these Christians and these Islamists in other countries just get along and allow for religious freedom? But it's not until one has to live in these divided countries does one realize a nation divided against itself is laid waste. The same holds true for the moral issues in America today. Now, let me clarify a point here. It's not as if the Christian community will be instigating the trouble and the division. Instructions in the New Testament about nonviolence and living at peace with all men keeps the Christian community relatively docile. The problem and the trouble will come from the pagans who out of hatred for Christianity and for Christianity's passive resistance will persecute the church. Then the Christian community will no longer identify with the pagan state, the beast, the Antichrist system, and then the Christian community will vote with its feet and create its own new government. Well, let's get back to talking about Donald J. Trump, because he's the current figure representing the conflict. He's become the lightning rod. Last weekend, I attended the Trump rally in Wildwood, New Jersey. My son was gung-ho on attending, so why not? It was the best show in town. I attended Trump's rally in Wildwood in the winter of 2020. It was freezing, but the people still came out in mass. They held the rally indoors, so there wasn't enough room for everyone to get in. But this time, the Trump campaign held the rally on the beach. The news reported that there were 80,000 people there, but these things always get exaggerated. I calculate about 25 to 30,000 people. But that's still a huge amount of people. It takes some serious dedication for these people to drive all the way to exit 12 from the parkway and wait in line for 3 hours to go through security to get onto the beach. Doors were open at 12 and Trump didn't show up until 6:30. 25,000 people waited patiently for him. I don't believe even George W. Bush or Ronald Reagan, or the Pope for that matter, could draw such a large crowd. We certainly know Biden couldn't even draw anything close to the crowds that Trump draws. Biden just finished what he called his battleground state campaign tour. He drew tiny little crowds of 50, 100, 200 people. I suspect he had more staff in attendance than the voting public. The spin the media put on it was his plan is content over crowds. But Trump, he can draw a crowd because he resonates with the common man. In addition, relating to his political positions, Trump has a certain charisma. He doesn't use a teleprompter. He speaks off the top of his head extemporaneously. And you can tell this because his speech is not perfectly organized. And he'll sometimes ramble and repeat himself. But it comes from his heart. And that's what makes him relatable. Now, the elitists, the educated eggheads, even in the Republican Party, don't get this. They're looking for a polished political speech with all of the political correct jargon. But real down-to-earth, blue-collar Americans, which is most of America, are tired of hearing those types of political speeches. Nobody's going to stand for 6 hours waiting to hear one of those speeches. They can just watch that on the internet. But Trump is bringing something different to the table. Now, as far as Trump's policies, he said something in his speech that really explains Trump's popularity. He said his campaign is about common sense. Of course, the borders should not be open to let everyone in. Of course, men should not be competing in women's sports. Of course, we should arrest and jail criminals in our cities. Of course, America should defend its national integrity and protect its businesses. But what exactly is common sense? Because if you talk to a leftist, they have a completely different worldview concerning common sense. So in listening to the policies Trump was promoting in his speech, the difference between Trump and the left occurred to me. Trump believes in doing the right thing as a function of a higher metaphysical law. What matters is doing what's right regardless of people's feelings. And this is the traditional way of thinking about law and policy. But on the other hand, the moral basis for the left has become affirming people. Up with people over law. And any law that hurts people's feelings should not be a law. And that's why Trump can say the criminal, illegal, immigrant element should be thrown out of the country and criminals should be arrested, end the no bail, no jail. But those on the left would say no one should be considered illegal or less than or a criminal because people's self-esteem and affirmation comes before any national identity or border or criminal law. And this is the ideological, religious, philosophical basis for the left's secular humanism, that law is a function of human desire. And we're now seeing the political ramifications of secular humanism in governance. Anyway, Donald Trump represents America's values of the past. You could even call Trump a Democrat transport from the 1950s. The supporters of Trump are not the college elites who have been discipled in the new religion of critical race theory, racial identity, cultural Marxism, queer theory, LGBTQ values. Trump supporters are the older blue-collar generation and a minority of counterculture conservative young people. Trump finds support from the Christian conservative community, as well as union workers, bikers, people who despise the bureaucratic leisure class. Trump attracts both moral conservatives and economic conservatives. And what I find surprising is that even though Trump is not fully a moral economic conservative, the Democrat left hates this man with a passion. Now, I could see them hating a Ted Cruz or a Ron DeSantis, but Donald Trump, in many ways, is one of their own. You would think they would tolerate him as a moderate Republican. But the fact that they hate him, even for the little bit of conservatism he has, just shows us how far the left has moved toward the left. That the left is fully dedicated to transgenderism, globalism, and Marxism. And the hating of America's founding and its foundation, they really do want to remake America into a dystopian, immoral, George Orwell 1984 communist state. It's like Revelation chapter 12:12. Woe to the earth and the sea, because the devil has come down to you, having great wrath, knowing that he has only a short time. So America is becoming two Americas. And the people are becoming polarized. Just because Trump has huge numbers at his rallies may not translate into a victory in November. Because those who love him really love him, but those who hate him really hate him. Look at how the Democrats have been indicting Trump on multiple charges and multiple trials in desperation to try to stop him and to drive a wedge between him and his supporters. Here's an interesting piece by Ben Shapiro. The war on Trump is about something bigger than he is. And Shapiro does a good job in summing up the situation. Quote, the attempts to take down Donald Trump are quite real, and they're having significant consequences for the body politic. They're coming from nearly every major institution in the United States, from our universities to the media to academia to the judiciary. It's happening everywhere. The real question is this really about Donald Trump as a person? Is it really about Trump with all of his myriad foibles, mistakes, and craziness? Or is it something broader? I would contend that it's something broader, that the elite institutions in our society have basically decided that if anyone remotely right-wing were ever to enter the presidency again, it would be an existential threat to their vision of a utopian future for the United States. Trump is just the apotheosis, the apex of all that they hate, and they're able to stack up Trump's myriad of craziness and foibles on top of all that they hate about Republicans, unquote Ben Shapiro. But let's ask ourselves the question. What is it that they despise about Trump and the right? And I believe it goes back to what I said earlier about the different bases for morality on the right and the left. What the people are increasingly hating is any law outside of themselves that constrains them or indicts them as being bad. And Republicans and conservatives, being the party of the law of nature and nature's God, is what they truly despise in their hearts. This is the Psalm chapter 2 prophecy, that the nations and the people and the political leaders want to throw off the rule of God. Now, in conclusion, let's talk about the riots and the protests that will likely take place this fall if Trump wins. We're at a point in our country where the left will not accept a conservative president. Remember when Trump won back in 2016? The left vowed that he is not their president, and they would fight him and oppose him at every opportunity, as they did with all of these various collusion hoaxes, the Russian collusion, the phone call collusion, and the various impeachments. The day after Trump was inaugurated, on January 21st of 2020, Democrat groups organized a women protest in Washington, 500,000 women protesting for feminism and LGBTQ rights in opposition to President Trump. We can expect the same and worse if Trump wins this year. I mean, these are not a people who practice 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 17, fear God and honor the king. Here's an article. What will happen when they give the green light to millions of radicals to cause widespread chaos all over America? This article is kind of lengthy, but it's worth the read to help us really understand what may happen. Quote, violence and crime are already completely out of control all over the United States. In fact, you definitely wouldn't want to be caught in the streets when a horde of our lawless young people are running wild. If things are this bad already, what's going to happen if the election in November does not go the way the leaders on the left want, and they give the green light to millions of radicals to cause widespread chaos all over America? I think we got a small preview of what this could look like during the riots of 2020. Unfortunately, since that time, the open border policies of the Biden administration have allowed millions of extremely desperate people to come pouring into this country. The stage is being set for civil unrest on a scale that we have never seen before, and it certainly isn't going to take much to push our society over the edge. We're already experiencing a crime wave of epic proportions, but I'm extremely concerned about what will happen if things go a certain way in November. If they don't win the election, leaders on the left may decide to make it very clear that it's time for civil disobedience on a massive scale. I've been warning about civil unrest that would completely and utterly tear this country apart for many years, and I believe that we are now right on the brink of seeing that happen. Many of our major cities have reached a point where they are literally on the verge of being ungovernable. And America is becoming a little bit more lawless with each passing day. Unquote. Jesus said to his disciples, on the Mount of Olives during the Passion Week, lawlessness will increase. And the Antichrist is called the man of lawlessness. And 2 Thessalonians 2:7, the mystery of lawlessness is already at work. Now, I don't want to over-alarm people so that they panic and fail to trust God's hand of providence and protection, but I want us to watch and be ready. Through all this, God is going to showcase what's really in the hearts of the people. God exposes evil before he judges it. He exposes evil to teach the righteous, his people, and to lead those who are open to realize the truth of God versus the lies of evil. I'm out of time. I'll further discuss this topic in my extended YouTube and Rumble versions of this program and my channel, God and Country Biblical Exposition. The website to listen to this program again or to get all of the video links is at my website, godandcountryradio.org. Thank you for being a fellow worker in the truth. Thank you for your prayers and support. May Jesus Christ reign.